Blog Talk Radio.
Opportunity to put myself in the
driver's seat, so to speak, of being a prisoner to circumstances or being free from the opinions of others. And it was a divine day because that's all I did. It was a celebration of watching the old fall away and then seeing the new trying to break through and be itself. An amazing week for me. My energy has been pretty low tonight. I mean, almost so low that I thought I might have to cancel the show. And I kept on postponing it. And then I said, you know what? I need to do this for me because it is all about me teaching me. And as I always say, listening out loud. And I want to just take a moment and ask the highest love within me to make known herself through me so that anyone that's listening tonight or, again, as I always say on the archive, can get what they came to hear from tonight's show. Because I really feel that I've picked up the global suffering tonight in my particular area in Florida. There wasn't much as far as fireworks. There wasn't much sound at all. There was a lot of color, but not much sound. And it was interesting because I didn't feel the real energy that I usually feel on 4th of July where people are excited about celebrating their nation or their lives or whatever. And with that, I wanted to take a little sidestep and wish Rosa, who is the co-owner of With Insights Radio, so many blessings. She got married yesterday to a beautiful man, a beautiful partner for her. And I wish her all the love and all the peace and all the joy that anyone could ever want because she's an absolute beautiful angel. All right, so going back to the concept of freedom, some things happened this week that was just so mind-boggling. I made a decision that I was going to break free from the restriction and the constriction I'm in right now because I've really been, for the last 3 years, kind of a victim of so-called circumstances. And though I don't believe that I am, I have been. I believe that circumstances are an effect of what the cause is in me. But I have been, I feel, unfairly treated, accused, attacked, used, all different things from different aspects of myself. And so when I made this decision to go to New York, which I'm going to do in the next week or so, I put it out there and I immediately got a vision of one of my friends, Marilyn Kane, who's on my Facebook. She's a lovely woman who lives in my area who's just an angel. And oddly enough, she called me the next day and said she had a friend that had a place that I might be interested in. So I waited a couple of days. I finally called the woman and turned out that she was an absolutely perfect reflection of all I am. We talked very little bit about the apartment that she had to rent. We talked more about the shadow. And basically, you know, she told me I'm a victim. And it's odd because my only objective this entire life was to bring people out of victimization from the time I was little. And then when I made the decision to be spiritual, to have that awakening and be conscious, that's all I did, take people out of an injustice and bring them into their full potential of the power in their own reality. So what had happened was, I said to her, I'm not a victim. And she said, okay, well, then that's the answer. And I said, what? She goes, yes, you are. Anything you deny, you are. And all of a sudden, I started looking at the denial that I've proclaimed, me being innocent. And though I was really preying on victimization. And the more that I did that, the more I started my reality. It was hard, a hard, hard pill to swallow. And the reality was, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I say to people that know me that, you know, I've taught, supposedly, they're really my teachers, but I said, you know what, I know that there's one issue that I can't see. Please tell me what it is. And no one did. no one could see it. You know, an honor of love, you know, you inspire, you bring healing, you bring peace, you bring joining. How can you be a victim? I mean, it makes no sense. But yet, when she said that, I felt like I was truly given the key to the kingdom of heaven. And I want to honor that aspect of the one called Yolanda, because she gave me so much in that telephone conversation. And I feel like definitely like I do with Iggy, that, you know, the owner of this radio station, that he really is a brother, the brother I never had. And although we don't really know each other well in the body, there's just some kind of an unspoken understanding that we have for each other in the past. And I met this woman, and I feel all of a sudden the same thing about her. I feel like she was the angel I was given. So with that in mind, I come back to the reality that I'm a victim. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, how do I rise above that mentality? Because I still see injustice. And though I don't claim it as injustice, I rise above it, it's still unjust. I'm still seeing it as being that. So with that in mind, as I sat down at the computer, I got the immediate idea that Corinthians was what I needed to go to tonight, Corinthians 13. And all of a sudden, like I do, like happens to me mostly with the Bible verse, it comes through me with an interpretation that's really profoundly beautiful and an interpretation that makes sense to me, which I think that's what it's all about. It's a personal relationship with God, and if the Bible is the word of God, then I'm being told in a way that I can understand. And that's another area that I want to address shortly, but let me just go into Corinthians for a second. And it says, basically, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Now, what I had to do with this, not had to do, and welcome to the guest in the chat room. Thank you for being here. What I had to do was say, wait a second. I believe that everything in my perceptual reality is about me. And I so totally believe that the Bible is a psychological book, and it is given to all to interpret in a way that suits their path. So if I was to say, if I speak in tongues of men or of angels but do not have love, and if I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal, you know, I'm talking about me professing the angelic realm, me talking and channeling these concepts, which many do. You know, we have Basha, we have the Abraham teachings, and when you look at them and listen, they're all the same. They're just rewording it. And Rampa, they're all just rewording it. And A Course in Miracles. I remember talking to the Rampa people years ago and saying to them, A Course in Miracles is the most profound book. They laughed at me. I said, everything that you're learning in this in the School of Enlightenment, I already know through A Course in Miracles, which is just really an opening within me, a portal of knowledge that's being given me, like opening the Akashic Records. So if I was to look at this Corinthians 13 as it's written, what about it? I cannot profess I am a channel and that the angelic realm speaks through me if I don't have love. I can talk it all I want, but it's just clanging cymbals. And if I have the gift of prophecy, which is I'm a psychic and I'm an intuitive and a clairsentient and can fathom all the mysteries and knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, which I feel sometimes I do, but I do not have love, I am nothing. And those are the people that are so evolved. Let's say, like, for instance, a Donald Trump, who obviously has the keys to manifestation as far as wealth. Does he have love? If he doesn't, he has nothing. And that's an aspect of the greed of humanity. And not to call him that, because I do see a very sweet man with a beautiful heart aspect reflected. But it's not about gain and greed. It's about love. And then it goes on to say, and if I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. And to me, the poor would be the ones that go and they tithe. I have a lady I know in town that she swears by tithing, and her whole life she lives off people tithing to her. And she believes that's God, because she believes she's a minister for God and she deserves it. But it's coming outside in. She doesn't believe God is her source. She believes that the tithers are. You know, so I give to the poor and the suffer and the suffering, but I don't care about me. I don't give, let God give to me. Then I don't have the wealth to give to another. I don't have the love to give to another. And then love is patient and kind. You know, am I patient with myself? You know, do I stay in a state of dwelling on what I don't have and envy what I, you know, a perceptual other or my mindset that may be more alluring and appealing than the one I'm in the moment? Do I want more than I have in the moment? And I don't dishonor others and the belief systems that come through me that aren't congruent with love. And the belief systems that come through me outpictured are people, places, and things. Do I ignore, do I dishonor them? Yes, I do. Sometimes I do. I don't honor them because I don't believe in disease. I don't believe in suffering on that level. But yet, I dishonor those belief systems. I don't just let them be. I don't show love, which is truly the acceptance of what is. If I was really to in this moment, confirm or not confirm, but give a definition, a clear definition of love, it would be acceptance. That's to accept what is. Do I accept my father? I live in an unhealthy environment only because I dishonor his path in me, through me, at me. I don't let it be. I have to judge it. It says it keeps no records of wrongs. What is keeping no records of wrongs within? That is the unforgiveness. And the unforgiveness, I will tell you, will bring you down. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. And that's me saying today, I don't want to know these people today that made me feel less than love. And I'll get into that in a moment. I don't want to know them. I want to block them because they're not seeing that my intent is to love. If they're not seeing it, then I'm not being loved. It just boils down to that. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. This is all within. I protect the love I am by being it. I trust that it is given me. And I always know that it's there. And I consistently pray without ceasing. How? By being loved. By being loved. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be silent. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is it in part? Disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me, for now we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And this is what the Course in Miracles calls the holy instant, perpetually knowing God is in everyone I meet. The projection makes four separate states of being. the prophecy of what will be, the knowledge that I must pass to another, is making me appear to me more than I am in the body. I am separate from my brother. But when I realize that everything that's happening is happening within me, what I'm doing is I'm setting myself up to project the false outcome that's going to let me down, bring me down. And that's basically what's been happening. As soon as I realized that I was being a victim for the last umpteen years, when this lady said you're not a victim, well, that's your shadow. You are a victim. And I said, oh, my God, now I see why I bring that in. Because it's not a conscious program. It's a subconscious program that says to me, you're not good. You're a bad girl. You don't know what you're talking about. Stop laughing so much. This is not good art. This is terrible poetry. Throw it in the garbage. Your mother's on the phone and you're singing. Stop. Lower your voice. Children should be seen and not heard, and on and on and on until I became a victim of circumstances. And I become now the teacher of truth that says, you know what? Circumstances are an outpicturing of what I feel. And now I'm awakened. I'm conscious. What I am is what I see. And vicariously, these little aspects of my fabric of being who I was are letting me realize that I still have in me belief systems that are keeping me in a lower vibratory rate of being and making me actually a target for that which is not good, that which is not love, that which is not kind. And it's all happening within my very own mind. My daughter-in-law was pregnant, and now she's not. And it was a devastation for me because it was my baby boy's first baby, first pregnancy. And when I found out, I immediately looked on the internet because, you know, I feel like, especially my Amanda of Love Facebook, I don't know why, but I feel like there really is such a kinship in that many people on there about love and peace and joy and healing. And Jeff Brown, who is an author of a book, he's a famous author. He's born in America, and you know they talk about him a lot. And again, it's called something about shape-shifting. I will tell you by the end of the show. I'll look it up. But at the same time that I found out, he said his father died, and he was shocked because he really didn't have a relationship with his dad. And I could feel immediately this almost unspoken connection because I see this man as being, as I am, very inspirational and life-changing. And all of a sudden, what is so important to us as far as body, called mommy, daddy, and children, and whatever, is gone. And it really moved me because I really felt a feeling, tone, connection to him that I hadn't really felt before. It's personal, you know, it's an ego feeling, but I felt something different. And what he goes into, he says a letter to his daddy wrote today, which is absolutely beautiful, basically saying that now he doesn't have to feel shame, that he feels his father empowering him, actually, and bringing him new life, which he never felt before. And it's beautiful. But what he says at the last thing that he wrote really moved me. He wrote, I am forging a truce with my shame. It is weak in the knees, stumbling down the karmic staircase. It is reaching for the handrail, trying to pull itself back up. But the handrail is wet with self-love. It can't get a grip. It is falling farther and farther down and away. It knows its time is almost done. Imagine how powerful we are without shame. A whole new universe of empowered delight awaits. I want to live there. Shame, shame, go away. Come again, no other day. And that's what I feel I'm letting go of. Because after that happened, I wrote this on my Facebook, on that particular page, Amanda of Love, that they had lost the child, and that please send them my dear friend's love and prayer and healing for this deep time of sorrow. And with that, I didn't have any opportunity to really feel my feelings. You know, she was with her mother, my son was at work, and I was all alone at the computer. And all of a sudden, the tears started to fall. And I felt such a sense of gratitude because I felt that they had each other and that they were right now in that moment feeling the loss of that child, but they were feeling it through love. And I thought, oh my God, what gratitude. I wrote this. I wrote to them the name. My heart cannot express the sorrow I feel for this loss. And what that, and with that said, right now I feel so much love, tears of such deep gratitude to know how much you two love each other and to know that this love will override any obstacle that may come your way. My baby found the love of his life. What greater gift can a mother have than this? And then tears kept on falling, and I shared that. Thank you to his wife for loving my son as you do. Thank you to my son for loving your wife as you do. You guys are so blessed. If only, it's only the beginning of one of the world's greatest love stories. I love you both. And immediately, I got an email, and I was asked to take that down, that it wasn't appropriate. And I said, of course, you know, I'm the girl suffering. I can't. And with that, I let it go, and I sent her a good night with a hug, and I didn't hear back. And then this morning when I got up, I went on my pages, which I usually do. I check everything. And one of her relatives, a cousin, an older cousin, wrote me and told me how after 15 people wrote blessings and love and we're so sorry and we send healing to these beautiful people. And she said that it was inappropriate and I violated the rights of her cousin and how dare I. And all I could feel was shame. All I could feel was, oh my God, do they know how sad I am? Do they know how sad I am for them, but also for me as the grandma, the potential grandma of this child, this spirit that was gone? And I did everything in my power to try to bring them to a state of peace throughout the last couple of weeks when they found out that they were pregnant and stuff. So again, what was I feeling? I was feeling like a victim. And it was really hard for me because I see how it's happened in other cases. And I'm always made to believe through the aspects that I did something wrong. And it goes back to the childhood of being not celebrated, which I talk about a lot in my teaching. That my birth was not celebrated and my mom was sick from the time I was born. And I felt solely responsible for her sickness and her unhappiness. And because of that, I underplayed my entire life. And I have allowed parts of myself outpictured, the guilt and the fear and the shame, to blast me with attack, accusations, judgments, you know, harsh judgments of my teaching for the last 20 years. You know, calling it abstract and, you know, what do you think you know and whatever. And the reality is it doesn't matter, you know. And what Jeff says here is that basically shame is coming up to leave. I feel my physical body and my mind feels like the fabric of my being is disassembling. That everything that was in place is now coming apart. And my physical body, I haven't eaten for 10 days. I have absolutely no appetite. And today when I thought about it, I said, you know what? What a gift. That's another addiction that's gone. You gave up your glasses almost 4.5 months ago, and now food is becoming less than important. And instead of seeing it as something to worry about, think about, and fear about, that maybe there's a sickness going on, to think that I am finally changing. that I'm finally present, that I'm finally consciously aware that it is up to me to change what was by allowing the highest knower within me to let me be what it, love itself, desires for me to be. I had another beautiful awareness, which, you know, I might cry about. So if I do, I'm sorry, or, you know, I guess it's just meant to be. Before my daughter-in-law got pregnant, I was feeling like my life was over. I was really feeling like I did all the teaching that I can do. I mean, I've over the last 20 years, I know that I've helped to transform the world called Ananda's world dramatically. You know, I have so much in testimony in people's lives changing, in situations changing, in health conditions changing, in the aid center with my own physical body. And then I thought, you know, I should just go. God, what, you know, God, giver of all, why are you keeping me in this reality? And I said, you know what, when she got pregnant, I said, okay, I can't go now, because if I go, it would take away from the happiness and the bliss of having their first child, which is my first grandchild, to that relationship. And then when I found out that the baby was gone, I said, oh, my God, I can leave now. And I mean that. I mean that I can leave now quietly. Maybe I will leave the body. Maybe I'll just leave the circumstances. Maybe I'll just go and walk into another reality, which I know that I've done billions of times. We all have. Just by changing a viewpoint slightly, we go into different simultaneous realities. But so much has come up regarding that, you know. And it's just really interesting. Tonight when I went out, and again, 4th of July, and I had no, you know, there's different places to go, but I just drove. And drove and drove and drove and sat by the water and then came back and said, oh, my God, my energy, what's going on? And then all this awareness came to me, which I was really grateful for. I grabbed a bunch of books, which I usually do. One book usually, but I grabbed a bunch of books, and I just thought that I would refer to them as, you know, almost like, what do you call it? When you pick up a tarot card, it's called like an omen or whatever, a sign of what's going on. And just like a teacher in the moment. And so I opened up to the Course in Miracles meditation book, and this one is for today, for the 5th. Be still. It says, often we grudgingly and hurriedly move from one activity to the next, feeling out of time and short of breath. Is there really, I'm losing my sight for a second, very interesting, is there really that much to do? Some of us keep ourselves busy in order to feel worthwhile. If that's the case, let's remember that it's the ego, not that our real self, the perceived lack of womb, of worth, nice. We simply need a change of mind now and then. We can rest. The stillness awaits us. In the stillness, we heal. Beginning each day with a time of stillness gives us a chance to remember the Holy Spirit. That's no guarantee that we will not be ruled by the ego in the next hour, but each recollection makes the next one easier. Process makes it natural to turn to the Holy Spirit for the guidance and the peace we deserve. We need not be busy all the time. We need not be busy ever. In fact, it's our choice to be peaceful or busy. We'll do a better job of the former, if we have been still for a few moments. And then it ends with, going peacefully through today is easier if I've had some quiet time with the Holy Spirit. Now, it's interesting that the hesitancy of my vision, because all of a sudden I felt I couldn't read because I was focusing on the eyes. You know, and that's what I feel is going on. I feel like really that the old self's breaking apart. I tell you, the concept of re-educating the eyes to heal, to see, is so profoundly beautiful that I can't tell you that I could actually read the fine, fine lines on this aloe water bottle. I was with a lady and she was just blown away. She goes, "You wear it. 425 in one eye is your prescription, 370 in the other. Oh my God." And I tell you, it's amazing. For the most part, I don't know that I ever wore glasses. But that's only because that's the handing it over, giving it over to the one that knows, the one that is the true vision, visionary in every sense. And it is really about re-educating the body called brain and its puppet called the body. It's marionette called the body. Pretty interesting. So that's really cool about relaxing, because what had happened when I was driving around tonight, I ended up on this block that I, you know, frequent. And I tell you, I was in traffic on a block that never has traffic, but because of the fireworks, I guess. And I didn't even see any of them, which was really interesting. For 35 minutes, my car did not move, and I could not understand why I was there. And so everything has been kind of challenging me. My old self is begging resonance in me, in my consciousness. It's saying, please, please, put your attention on me. Stop taking it off of me. You know, it's really interesting to see when you become the observer and you really do become conscious, what's going on, that everything around you truly is telling you where you are in every moment. So then I opened up to the next book, which is Accept This Gift from A Course in Miracles, which is a beautiful little book, of which I've used many a times. What they've done is taken A Course in Miracles and made little sections of prose and poetry. And this one I opened up to, unbelievably so, is pain, which I feel tonight probably the most deepest pain that I felt forever, because it feels like there's no conscious reason for it, that it's all residue, remnants of what was. So this says, pain is a sign illusions reign in place of truth. Pain is a wrong perspective. When it is experienced in any form, it is proof of self-deception. It's not a fact at all. There is no form it takes that will not disappear if seen right. Nothing can hurt you unless you give it the power to do so. Pain is but the sign you have misunderstood yourself. Now, again, this show is going to be on for another hour. If there's any callers out there that want to call in with a question, comment, or just tell me they love me, please do. And also in the chat room, please feel free to ask questions. The archive, when you do listen to it, if there's anything that you stumble upon that, you know, freaks you out or you want to comment on, you know, just feel free to email me at anandaoflove@aol.com. And also my website is www.mindmending.net, and there's a lot of goodies on there, and also information about my counseling. When I go to New York in July, it'll be probably July into August, there will be different happenings with me in the city and maybe in Long Island, because that's where I'm going to be staying. So if there's anybody that wants to either hold A Course in Miracles gathering, or what I do and what I'm going to be doing in Central Park is what we're going to be calling them, is what I have on the site, and it's called Mind Mending Circles. And it's going to be a way to remove the block in an instant with an under of love. And also, I'm going to learn raw food, because I really believe that that's my next design of being, my next creative endeavor that the giver of all wants to bring forth through me. Anyway, so let's go back to this. So when the pain is a sign that illusions reign in place of truth, and it's just a wrong perception. It's actually me misunderstanding myself. That's profoundly beautiful. Do you not see that all your misery comes from the strange belief that you are powerless? Seek not outside yourself, but all your pain comes simply from the futile search for what you want, insisting where it must be found. Look about the world and see the suffering there. Is not your heart willing to bring your weary brothers rest? They must await your own release. They stay in chains till you are free. Pain is the ransom you have gladly paid not to be free. It is your thoughts alone that cause you pain. Nothing external to your mind can hurt or injure you in any way. There is no cause beyond yourself that can reach down and bring oppression. No one but yourself affects you. There is nothing in the world that has the power to make you ill or sad or weak or frail. But it is you who have the power to dominate all things you see by merely recognizing what you are. I mean, could we really get into that feeling tone of what it feels like to remember, just simply remember who I am, who you are, to know that everything in perceptual because of something that you believe to be true. And it could be as simple as believing that there is a neighbor that's a criminal, and it could be diabetes runs in the family. It could be I only hang out with angry people. Whatever the belief is will be made known in your perceptual reality. So what I do is I look at the perceptual world and say, what is it teaching me about me? And that's basically what I've been teaching over and over and over for the last 20 years. And I've been teaching it to myself, obviously, because I meet the perfect aspect of me that says, you are a victim. And she said, how do I know? Because I was one too. So she was seeing her past come to pass, and I was seeing my past present. And so I always say that everything in my perceptual reality showed me what was, what is, and what will be if I stay in that pattern of being. If I stay in that musical sonata, if I stay in that song, that same occurrence will, that's why in your periphery you'll see, oh, look at that, there's money there, look at that, there's garbage there, look at that, there's beauty, look at that, there's sickness. Because in that potential reality is all possibilities that are definitely a preconditioned possibility more for you than the other. Because in your perceptual reality, you're seeing those possibilities. In the perceptual other, they're seeing other possibilities. So in your first band of awareness or in your periphery, you are seeing possible past, present, and future. You just say, oh my God, I remember that relationship. It sounds just like my ex-husband and I. Or look at that. That's what I feel right now about that man. I love it. Oh my God, look how they're kissing and hugging. Oh, look at those people. My God, they're not even sitting at the same table. Their child has visitation rights, and the kids got to be pulled back and forth. And every one of those scenarios in that moment is showing you potential past, present, and future. And since we're infinite, that happens over and over, thousands and thousands and thousands of times a day. And since there's no day, it's just happening constantly. So this book is basically saying, the book that I called My Path, A Course in Miracles, which for me is the most beautiful and resonates completely with my soul. So then they go on to say, look at what you are afraid of. Only anticipation will frighten you. Under each cornerstone of fear on which you have erected your insane system of belief, the truth lies hidden. When fear has gone, there love must come, because there are but these alternatives. Where one appears, the other disappears, and which you share becomes the other one you have. And let me say that again. Where one appears, the other disappears, and which you share becomes the only one you have. Without anxiety, the mind is wholly kind. Slow, deceived was I. Oh, sorry. How deceived was I to think that what I feared was in the world instead of in my mind? Can you feel what it feels like and how manageable it can be if you get that what you see is in your mind? And I shared this, I think, the last week or the week before about having a moment of feeling the man that I'm in love with as if I was him. Because I realize that he is a product of me. I built him up in me through a thought form, through a feeling tone, through my perception of beauty. And I gave birth to that man. And that man is in me 24/7. Whether he dies, whether he's with another woman, whether he turns into a teddy bear, it doesn't matter. That experience that I made known in my waking dream is with me 24/7. So I allowed myself, because I missed him so desperately, I said, you know what, I'm going to be him. And all of a sudden, I felt him become my body. He actually became alive through me. And then I could see and feel his feelings and feel, and I say this all the time, there's a heat that comes from the body that for me is almost like a fingerprint that is so resonant with this aspect of me. And his skin, a touch of the skin, and I could feel it. And then all of a sudden my face became an expression of this aspect. And it was just one time that I really fully actualized it, and I was shocked to not see it separate from me and just appear there. But again, this is just one aspect. It could be a child that you could adore. It could be one of the world's most beautiful paintings that you once owned, and you want to be one with it. But so it goes right back to, again, it's all in the mind of the perceiver. And I shared this a lot in the beginning. Everything is relative to the mind of the perceiver. So as I relate to it in me, I see it made manifest out in my world. And there's no out, really. But it appears that, you know, one of the teachers in the Course in Miracles used to use this all the time, and I loved it. She used to say, you know, it's a projector with a film. What film are you putting in? So let's use the mind as a projector, and let's use the thought process as a film reel. And every moment, you decide what movie you're going to watch. And you are one with the movie because you are the projector projecting upon light upon it to bring it life. You know, if you don't put that light behind that film, there's no reflection. And so, again, I wrote this week, which I thought was wonderful, you know, mirror only shows you what it sees. So what was my daughter-in-law mirroring for me? You don't have a right to express yourself. You don't have a right to feel. You don't have a right to share anything about me. And all it brought up with me was, again, the feeling of I did something wrong. The shame. And it's beautiful because that's what my father's been teaching me since I'm a little girl, and I live with him now in a sick environment in my head that I'm assuming is my living space. So if I'm assuming my living place is a sick petri dish, which is what Bruce Lipton would say, why would I keep myself in the mindset of an unhealthy petri dish? Now, does that mean I got to leave it geographically? For me, I feel like I have to. because I have to mean that I am now in a new mind, because they go together. Cause and effect are one. And my physical body can't digest food. It feels like I can't swallow. It feels like I can't accept food. So I can't accept my thinking, my thought, my feelings right now. So what's happening is my body is agreeing. No, you can't. And if I can't, what happens? I have digestive issues. And those digestive issues become so toxic that eventually it affects the whole nervous system and it breaks down. So I know that, and that's what I do in those mind healing circles, mind mending. I don't want to call it a healing because I don't believe it's healing. It's just a mending. It's just a correction of error. I walked into my son's restaurant for about 5 minutes last night to basically see my grandson. I haven't seen him for a while, and I was feeling somber and almost hoping to bump into my son and my daughter-in-law. But they weren't there, and one of the guys in the kitchen had his right hand was ridiculously swollen. It was white, green. I mean, and I was like, what's going on? He said, my cat bit me 5 times. I said, what is going on? I went to the doctor. I got an answer. I said, what is going on? And he said, what do you mean, mama? And I said, your male can't take the initiative. What is going on? Why are you afraid to step forward and be the man? And he said, oh, my God, how did you know that? And I said, I don't know anything. Your body is telling me that. Your circumstances is telling me that. I tell people for years, if you give me a computer, I'll know exactly where you are, where you were, and where you're going physically, as far as disease, as far as leverage, as far as anything, because everything you are is your computer. Your computer is a mirror of you. It's like the body. It shows you exactly what's going on. But it's clear on the computer, because on the computer, it's far enough that you can see the forest for the trees. If it's in the body, most people can't relate. Oh, it can't be me. My mind. I got a cold because I caught it. No, you got a cold because you chose to be in an environment in your mind where you believe that colds are possible, which comes from a belief of worry and strife and stress. That's where it comes from. So everything in the physical circumstances called the body, even your computer is an out and picturing of your mind. And if it's got a virus, look within. If your animals are sick, what is going on with you? They're just mirroring you. I came to the awareness about 2 hours ago about the baby, thinking that the seed of love between my daughter and my son, the love seed, died. And that freaked me out because I said to myself, oh, my God. It was contradictory to everything I wrote them about coming together in such divine love. But I believe everything is a metaphor. So what does that mean? I don't know. What does it mean for me? Because they're not even there. They're just players in my world. Did the male-female nature, love nature's love seed die? You know, did my love seed, the seed, the romance, the sacred union that I was birthing in me die? Am I going to let it die? Am I going to choose that as a reality? The only reason that I live in a perceptual reality called the earth is because I believe that love in the body is everything. That relationship between man and woman is everything. So for the last 3 years, I've been serving a sick male, my dad, who's been choosing that reality because he doesn't want to hear anything that I have to say. That aspect of me is set in stone about being old and dying. And it's an old paradigm in me that I'm still keeping alive. I'm resuscitating it every time it stops breathing, because for me, the unknown is a lot more frightening than serving the male that's not present, that's not healthy, that's not emotionally attached to anything or anyone. And I see it, it's all apparent. So when it's in me, though, it's a lot harder, because it's very hard to see the cause and its effect when it's in you, when it's showing up as a body or it's showing up in a relationship. That's why a lot of people oftentimes have a hard time
seeing their own relationship, you know, as a problem, even though he's beating her, even though she's using him, even though there's cheating going on. Because it's a lot easier to see others, the neighbors, or, you know, that, oh, look at her, she's flirting. Look at him, he's not good to her. But in truth, that's just you denying what's happening in your own relationship. So with that in mind, again, it goes back to the mind being the maker of everything we see. And for me, I've been, for the last couple of months, really trying to stay in the neutral zone. You know, I've been trying to say, God, giver of all, you decide. I even said it on the way home tonight. You know, do you want me to leave this reality? I mean, is another of love done here? Do you want me to step into another reality? Because I don't understand. And as soon as I say that, I go right back into ego. If I know that I am one with the infinite field of bliss itself, what is it that I can't understand? What is it that's keeping me from peace? What is it that's keeping me from being truly loved, loving, in a union of divinity itself, where the male and female opposites come together to join a rainbow haze of color and light and abundance and beauty that resonates for all the world to see? What belief system am I still holding on to that says, you know what, you can't do it? No, it's not going to happen. Can't have it. I don't know why, you just can't. You know, and why can't the male understand that he has to love the woman by loving himself, by adoring himself and not depriving himself of being with her? Not depriving himself of settling for less than he is. And we do that. We do that because we really think that this world is about, as I say all the time, doing, to be, to have. You know, we don't need to do nothing but be what we want to see. Be it. Be it. I'm feeling a lot more energy, and I feel that, you know, the show is really me telling me to wake up. You're not slipping. You're not sliding backwards. You're just shedding some more skin. You're shedding the old skin so that you can walk in the glory and the peace of being who you are as a child of the Most High. You know, the trip to New York is horrifying because I'm doing it alone, and I don't really have what you'd family and friends. It's been 23 years since I've really had any connections up there. But where is up there? Where is the friends that I don't have? You know, they're all in my belief. There's the belief. As soon as I said I was going, I connected with a woman. And the woman is immediately centered me. I felt a connection, like I'm okay if I go up there. And she's not even in the same location I'd be in, but it doesn't matter. All I'd have to do is call her and she'd be there. Or she is there. She's always there because she's one with me. And you already said that the last show, you know, or the show before, what could you possibly feel about aloneness when you know that you're one with God, with everything, and you are it? You know, the body wants to have that partner, and it deserves to have the perfect reflection of its desire realized, because we are God. And we can walk with the king. We can walk with the prince. We can be the queen. We can be the princess. We can have the perfect body. And we don't have to do it to make it happen. All we have to do is be it. And as soon as I said to myself, you know what? What do I have to lose by bringing myself to the New York state of mind? When I was in New York and as a teenager, it didn't matter with when I was on the train, what time, with who. Never did. I never had fear. I did whatever I wanted, mostly alone. And then when I became a mommy, I mean, I did everything with my kids. I never had fear about it. But why would I fear it? The New York state of mind for me is riches. It's an energy that I am. It's complete knowing that infinite potential is there.
It's a city that never sleeps. It's awake 24/7. That's where I want to be. That's where I am. It's hard for me to sleep. Most times I cannot sleep. I actually am up till 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and it's like I have to meditate to go to bed because I can't sleep, because it's not about sleep anymore. It's not about sedation. It's not about addiction. It's not about needing something outside of me that's just a mirage that can't quench my thirst, even if it could. It's not real. It's an illusion. It's all an illusion. So why not assume the state of being that which you desire to see? Fear is only a mental construct that will keep you bound to disease, that will keep you bound to disease. The celebration today in my town was hardly celebrated, because mostly people are starting to say, in my world, this is crazy. I believe all this time that my government, that my world, that my outer conditions were there for me. When there's nothing there for you but a mirage. All idols are falling. The revelation has come. It's coming to pass. And the only way to survive it is to rise above it, to see it for what it is. I was caught numerous times today in the illusion of believing that I was being unfairly treated. Of course, the miracle says, beware of seeing yourself fail, being unfairly treated. Because as soon as you do, you know what happens? You are unfairly treated. By who? By your belief that you can be. By your belief that you can be. So, my body is looking great. It's feeling timid because it never dreamed that it wouldn't be hungry. I can't remember a time where I didn't struggle with, well, I want more food. And all of a sudden, all I'm digging is ginger beer, ginger soda, the Jamaican soda, and the cookies to go with it. I'm having a little snack here and then, but to actually have a meal, I'm drinking aloe. I'm doing herbs that, you know, that a parsley chew, but I'm not eating food. I'm not needing to eat anything outside of me. Ginger to me is like I talked about last week when I started having the problem with the food, that I opened that can of the ginger coconut soup, and I actually felt like it was an orgasmic experience, that I felt one with that soup. And I actually believe then what the Buddha was saying when it says that you actually with your lover, as your every bite you're taking is a destiny to fill, is a completion of being. And I felt it. I felt that soup as if it was God itself. And I know all of this sounds bizarre even to me, but the reality is it did occur. I did assimilate the male being me in me through me. I did assimilate the feeling tone of being one with the coconut ginger soup. When I drink this ginger beer, I feel like it's one with me. And that's the congruency that we always hear about. That's the centering. That's the balancing. That's the true reflection of all I am. If it gives me indigestion and all this GMO conversation on Facebook, which I don't even look at, even though I don't look at that, it's obviously been for me because I'm not even looking in that direction for food anymore. So it's still an aspect of my mind saying that doesn't resonate anymore. Now, will this change? I don't know. It's weird. It's absolutely weird, but I know to put on a pair of jeans that I love and they fit and they look gorgeous in the physical body called my mind that's wearing clothes, wow, it's awesome. And it's awesome to not feel full and not to feel that I need to reach for any man, woman, thing, place, whatever. So
I'm grateful, and whoever, again, who's there outside. I don't have any callers on. That's okay, because obviously I need to keep hearing myself hear the giver of all tell me what I needed to hear that I hadn't been hearing and seeing, little glimpses. But that disassembling of self is very powerful, because it really feels like it may end the body. And, you know, not to be alarmed by that, because it doesn't matter, because that just means I shed the skin to go into another, you know, skin. And it's all about just evolution of consciousness anyway, and God realization means just that. The more that you realize who you are, the more godly you become. And at first it looks like, you know, a tsunami, because everything that was is flying in every direction in your mind, saying, take me back. And you're saying, wait a second, you don't fit in the show anymore. You don't fit on my stage anymore, because there's no place for you, you know. Matter of fact, my stage is empty right now, absolutely empty. And that's beautiful, too, because my idea for a stage play that I've been working on in my mind and my heart for 5 years is very, very possible. Because if I'm stepping down into the city of New York, background theater, who's to say who I'm going to bump into in my mind that I know is awaiting what I have to offer? You know, and it doesn't really matter, because it's just a game anyway, and it's just a show. It's just a movie, just a play. And so fear is the culprit. Oh, don't go. I keep hearing, oh, you're going to drive? I don't know if I'm going to drive. You're going to fly? I don't know if I'm going to fly. The fact of the matter is I am there already in another reality. And, of course, I think I got to, you know, teleport there on some level and take a car, take a, who knows. You know, I may wake up and be there. Neville Goddard used to always say that. He used to wake up in another, a lot of times in New York City hotels, because he was totally into believing that you'd be to see your reality change. And great, great teacher. He came to me, I think it was in 2002. Every book came. You know, it was like pure teaching. And I have a CD on his. I did 4 lectures of his and commentary that if anybody's interested in, they can just check out my website, again, mindmending.net, and you can download it there. So that's it. And everything that's occurring has been showing me that there is change occurring. And the change, again, for the most part, I did something really interesting. I washed the dishes, and the dish rack is in the right sink, and the beautiful love mug that I keep my utensils in when I wash them is on the left, and I wake up and my father has it exactly where it was when he went to sleep. He changes it right back to what it was. Everything he does is what he did the day before. It's an actual step-by-step operation, and it's a program, and it's a program that's in me that's not conscious of the fact that it's doing it in me. And that's what Bruce Lipton talks about, that most of what we are doing, we are unconsciously aware of doing. So whatever I did, I believe I did it by, you know, asking for blessings for my daughter-in-law and my son, was a program in me that was telling me that it's not okay to be honest. And that's been a big one for me. Because I'm a Sagittarius, that's what my script is this lifetime and this parallel reality. And it's all about honesty and integrity and being able to speak your truth and not being judged for it. And so that has been the good side of it and the bad side of it. And that's what astrology is about. You have the negative part of the characterization called your sign and the positive. And most of my life, I've been judged for my honesty. And if I lied, it was so not about lies to hurt, or, and it was always revealed, because I can't really hide anything, because I know that I'm only hiding from myself. So, you know, if you look at that, again, it's another opportunity that, what's his name, Bernacchi, what's this person? Santos Bernacchi does the whole astrology thing and how it relates to every aspect of our being, the chakras, the seasons. I mean, it's so profoundly beautiful. and me being into astrology since I'm 12 years old, really. I had to teach classes when I was a little girl. And it was only about characterization, about, you know, learning how to communicate with different types of personalities. And, of course, the whole chart says a lot, but Sagittarius is about that. And then I got a lot of Libra, so it's about balance and creativity. And the Scorpio is the depth of emotion, the intensity that people say, oh, my God, you're so intense. The intensity and the knowing that comes with the depth of the Scorpio, Mars and Scorpio, I mean, Mercury and Scorpio, which is my, I mean, that is like, that's like the psychic, that's like the intuitive, that's like the FBI, what are those guys called? Like the ones that, come on, what are they, private investigators. They know everything. And for me, for some reason, I see through everything. Even my family's issues, even my children's relationships, even my lover's issues, even my own, I see clearly, I'm blessed to see clearly. But in truth, they're all aspects of the universal oneness, and they're just archetypes that we come here to experience, and there's the good of it, and there's the bad of it, and it's just perception, and it's relative, because everybody has their own issues. Collectively, relatively, in the oneship, in the oneness. And so what I think and feel about you and what he thinks and feels about you and what she thinks and feels about you are all different. And we'll see it different. And we'll interpret it different. And we'll treat it different. But the fact of the matter is it's all relative to what we feel about ourselves. We can only see. Mirror can only see what it sees. It can only show you what it sees. And it's up to you whether you want to look. And that's beautiful. It's beautiful for me. It's beautiful for me to realize that I've come to a state of such clarity of being. And now for the body to marry the clarity, to marry the beauty and the innocence and the brilliance of being one with God, you know, is where I'm taking it. I'm allowing it to go. And I'm completely fine if it means that the body's going to shed itself. And I'm completely fine if it says I'm going to stay here and just be who I am. But I know that something different has occurred. And something different that has occurred means I already did step into another reality, which is very different from the one that I went to sleep as last night. We have another about 18 minutes left. If anybody wants to call in or to ask a question in the chat room, please feel free. I did bring other books. We've completely finished that one on Sheer. Yeah, we did. I'm going to open to a section, I think there's a beautiful section, they're all beautiful, but on love, because that's what we started with the Corinthians, with the understanding that the Corinthians are all about loving and respecting the self and not judging the thoughts and not denying the beliefs in the mind, but allowing them to just be, and that's love itself. And again, that's been a hard one for me, to keep myself in a scenario where somebody keeps saying, you did something wrong. So I run from it. You are not good enough. So I deny it and I yell at it. Or you are not the one. And I cry and I abandon it. But the fact of the matter, it's all me being taught from the time that I can... not even can, the time that I came into this reality, I came in with the spirit of that substance, that sticky substance that I will call injustice, shame, fear, insecurity, doubt. And I was denied rites of passage because my mother said, I do not want to have a baby. And so there I was. I was defiant even then to come in as the spirit as I am. And I just heard the other day that was so beautiful. you know, I get a lot of validation from the outside world, and I know that that's the full experience and the evolution of an idea that you think isn't really met its match or whatever. But I've been saying for a very long time that as a very young child, I completely disassociated from my family. I didn't have any connection. I was completely in my own little world. And this person, who is very spiritual, you know, as I am, as we all are when we open up to it, said that there are many evolved souls that come in that way, that they do not connect with the family. They have their own beliefs and they stick to it. You know, it's not the saga like, you know, many of the scientists or the behaviorists say that, you know, the first 8 years of life is all about the learning and then the unlearning. I came in with a sense of adequacy and I was challenged by it because I was even then intensely in love. And it was horrifying for those aspects of me that were just the polarity of what I was. And so instead of surrendering to them and their belief in needing to do, to have, to be, to have, I was it. I was love. I was psychic. I made things happen. I produced shows the young, I mean, things that most people don't even understand how it happened. I had this inner knowing, like a prodigy, but not about any one thing. It was everything. And I think many of the crystal, so-called crystal aspects of the mind, the children, the indigos, whatever they're called, are in fact that. It was hysterical. The other night I went into the local Cumberland because my couldn't open my twist open, my ginger beer. And as soon as I walked in, there's a kid there. Maybe about 10 years old, and there's a young guy behind the counter. And I said, Angel, can you try to open this? Because I'm having trouble. And the young boy said, open it with your mind. And that doesn't happen to most people. But I immediately said, I know I can. Do you believe you can? He said, yes, I believe I can. He was definitely one of the ones that was confirming what I've come to realize, that appeared to take me 20 years to come to realize, which he had already done, because he was an aspect of me that already is where I work so hard to be, where I think I work so hard, which is really a blink of an eye. And sure, there's no time, but it's just interesting. I got such a kick out of it. And then I got an opportunity to talk to him about his games and how he sees that, and, you know, his Wii game or whatever, you know, games that they play. But it's truth. He says, I know it. I said, do you really believe that? He said, yeah, I really do believe that you can change anything. And I said, that's cool. And that's the truth. So don't lose that. And I left and loved. And, you know, it was a beautiful moment for me to open my, and it never got open. We couldn't open it. That was really funny. All right, so I'm going to go into the section on love. In this little book from A Course in Miracles, it says, love will enter immediately into any mind that truly wants it, but it must want it truly. And that's where I say the giver of all, ask and you shall receive, is not outside in. It's you saying to God, yeah, give it to me. And that give it to me love, which can be a diamond, it could be a man, it could be a state of health, it could be anything, but it's always love. And love is moldable, so you can make it into anything you want. Which is really what God wants. He says, I want to see what that diamond looks on you. Let's make it a diamond. That love diamond. And then it says, your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all of the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. So that's what my concept that I teach, that the world is basically your teacher, 24/7, teaching you what are the blocks that are keeping you from your full potential. Love waits on welcome, not on time. Here we go again. You know, you got to be patient because there's a guy, there's a girl that's going to be in your life, but you know what? It may take some time. No. There is nothing to do. There is nothing. It has nothing to do with time. It's all about when you're ready to receive it. When you want only love, you will see nothing else. And I spend many time in time in another reality, which it had to be because I'm not in that reality right now, where I saw nothing but love, expression,
and every set of eyes I met. Everything I ate was divine. Everywhere I went was divine, because I was divinity itself, because I felt and saw only love. If love is sharing, how can you find it except to itself? Offer it and it will come to you, because it is drawn to itself. But offer attack and love will remain hidden, for it can live only in peace. And again, for me, it's not offering outside of me. It's offering God I am. Thank you, my Father. Thank you, God. Thank you, love itself, for giving me all you are. And as I am, it is extended outward. If I resist and say, why aren't you giving it to me, God? Why don't I have him? Where is he? Why are you keeping him from me? What's going to happen? That which you desire will be remain hidden because you don't see it. You're denying that it's there. It is the nature of love to look upon only the truth, for there it sees itself. With love in you, you have no need except to extend it. And that's why I say, when you are accepting love as is, all that you will see is the extension of all you are back at you. You will see love itself, or you'll see fear itself, one or the other. But fear is an illusion, because God is love. The infinite field is love. And love is what is. It doesn't matter if it's the murderer. It doesn't matter if it's the lover. It doesn't matter if it's disease. It doesn't matter if it's peace. It's all love. To accept it is to let it go. Because your acceptance of it is not judgment. It's the non-judgment that Jesus was talking about. I don't judge it, because I just let it be. And believe me, I am teaching this to myself. I am hearing out loud, because I believe disease is dark. And God's saying, who are you to judge it? Who are you to judge it? Just let it be. If you believe I am who I am, how could you dare judge it? And that's all biblical. Judge not, lest you be judged. What you judge as disease will become you. You'll be diseased by the disease. If love is sharing, how can you find it except to itself? Offer it and it will come to you, because it is drawn to itself. And I say that again and again. But offer attack and love will remain hidden, for it can only live in peace. And peace means, again, I accept. I accept your judgment. I accept that disease. I accept, I accept, I accept. I love, I love, I love. It is the nature of love to look upon only the truth, as I said, for there it sees itself. With love in you, you have no need except to extend it. You will not be able to give love welcome separately. You could no more know God alone than he knows you without your brother. But together you could no more be unaware of love than love could know you not, or fail to recognize itself in you. I'm going to read it one more time. You will not be able to give love welcome separately. You could no more know God alone. So you're saying, I love you. Love her. So as you do that, there's no attention. There's no acceptance. That's a false idolatry. That's the special relationship. I love you. I hate you. And that can't be God, because God loves all, because God is love. I'm going back to God, but I love the giver of all to me. That makes more sense. It feels right for me. All right, so you will not be able to give love welcome separately. You could no more know God alone than he knows you without your brother. But together you could no more be unaware of love than love could know you not, or fail to recognize itself in you. So of course, the miracle says it's mandatory for the other, because the other is the reflection of God himself made manifest. Love itself made manifest. You could not see it. God that cannot see himself is not for us.
We are its reflection, and our brother is our reflection, and on and on and on and on. Grace is acceptance of the love of God within a world of seeming hate and fear. Gratitude goes hand in hand with love, and where one is, the other must be found. Love without trust is impossible. And love without trust means I don't trust you because I think you're separate. I trust love, and now I look at you, and all I see is love. Gratitude goes hand in hand with love, and where one is, the other must be found. And that's what happened with this little letter to my daughter and daughter-in-law and my son. I felt such gratitude because I saw a couple embracing in pain and suffering in love. And I knew that that love would completely override any obstacle that ever comes in their way if they stay true to it. And I got a glimpse of it. I felt it. I didn't see it, but I felt it in every fiber of my being, so I know it is alive in me. And I was in such gratitude. Love would ask you to lay down all defense as merely foolish. Oh, my God, imagine. Imagine if we were not defending ourselves. As soon as I defend myself, I'm saying I am not one with God. God, please, in this moment, take away all my defense. Take away all my fear. Let me be free this night. Let me know freedom of being one with love. No course whose purpose is to teach you to remember what you really are could fail to emphasize that there can never be a difference in what you really are and what love is. Love is all I am. Ananda of love, the bliss of love, the remembrance of love. If you achieve the faintest glimmering of what love means today, you have advanced in distance without measure and in time beyond the count of years to your release. See the love of God in you, and you will see it everywhere because it is everywhere. I am one with God. I am the heir to the kingdom of heaven. I'm going to end with this because there's 2 minutes left. Awakening in God. The memory of God can dawn only in a mind that chooses to remember and that has relinquished the insane desire to control reality. You who cannot even control yourself should hardly aspire to control the universe. And that's where I give it all up. Give it all up to God. You decide. You know what's right for me. You know what's right for you because you're God. And I am the manifestation of all you desire to be. If I do not resist you, I am in love and one with you. If I stay in resistance, I put God on hold. All that is needful is to train our minds to overlook all little senseless aims and to remember that our goal is God. The recognition of God is a recognition of yourself. God dwells within. God's will for you. God's will for you is perfect happiness. The journey to God is merely the reawakening of the knowledge of where you are always and what you are forever. And with that, I say, peace be still and know that God is, I am, you are. We are one with God. Go back to love. Tonight, I am going back to love. I lost it. I lost love. Where? In my mind. I let myself go where love was lost. But now it's found. I love you. Feel the love. Know the love. Be the love. Let's change the world as we know it. Be loved. Be loved. I love you. Love you. Be free. Be loved. Be loved. Have a beautiful week. See you next week, midnight, the Bewitching Hour on the Love Channel. Good night.